So, you know, you are a countertenor. Most people know what that is, but for folks that are listening who maybe are not familiar with the voice, can you sort of give us a little countertenor 101?
Absolutely. I'm a male who sings in a woman's register, essentially, which means I sing in my falsetto, the head voice, and it's not actually so false as falsetto might make you think. It feels very natural, and it's the same kind of operatic singing that a woman does. They sing in their head voice. But I think people might recognize it more from people like the Bee Gees and Michael Jackson and Prince and even Justin Timberlake and Justin Bieber. They're all singing in a kind of falsetto, and they're pretty darn good. You know, Michael Jackson could really do it well, and I'm just doing the operatic version of that.
Yeah, well, you know, that brings up all kinds of images of, you know, Michael Jackson singing Handel, or you maybe covering some Michael Jackson.
I would love to. But I mean, it really goes back to the castrated men in the 18th century and 17th century for whom opera was written, and Handel was writing this music, and they really made opera popular because they were rock stars. And of course, they had gone through this terrible operation to maintain their high singing voices, but there was a frenzy around the way that they sang and the oddities that they were. And I think that frenzy, that first kind of rock star frenzy, is really what carried forward in some fashion over 300 years to make all of these high-voiced pop singers so popular in a way, and make it's that same phenomenon, it's that same kind of mystique.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And a great way for people to sort of get some insight into how that voice has changed over the centuries. Now, you have two composers on this disc, George Frideric Handel and Philip Glass, from obviously different poles, as it were, time-wise. And I can certainly see why you have Handel here, because he wrote a number of roles for the castrati. But why did you pair Handel with Glass for this recording?
Well, I really wanted my first album to be personal, and so I started thinking, okay, what music defined me? Well, Handel, of course. I'm a countertenor, and I've been singing it my whole life, and that's what I built my technique on. And then I thought, but I don't want to just make an album of Handel. That's what every countertenor has always done. It doesn't push the envelope, and I want to reach new audiences. I want to do something interesting and different. And I thought, well, what's been interesting and different in my career? What's changed me? And the answer to that was Philip Glass, whether it was seeing Einstein on the beach as a student, listening to his soundtrack to The Hours, or eventually getting to sing his Akhenaten. I realized that his brand of minimalism, with all this repetition, which some people love and some people hate, it is very human. You know, we as human beings obsess over things. We get a text message from someone we have a crush on and we read it five times. And that's what Philip Glass is representing in the human condition. And at the same time, the way the music progresses with its harmonic intensity, it elevates us, it transcends, it takes us to a different place. So I loved this idea of seeing if it would work. I mean, would it work to put Philip Glass together with Handel? I had no idea. But then I began to see these parodies. I mean, Handel, he has all of his arias in a da capo format, meaning that there's an A section, a B section, and then the A section repeats. So there's repetition. And then I looked at the text and how he uses it in the context of the aria. Well, he repeats little words over and over and over again. So was Handel somehow the proto-minimalist doing what Glass did but 300 years before? And was he using the same kind of harmonic shifts to create emotional sweep? I felt he was. So I put together this album that paired these two things, which are very different. And I would listen to these Glass pieces that were essentially pop songs. And I would think, well, you know what? Lascia ch'io pianga by Handel is a pop song. I mean, that was the pop song of its time. So I found all these connections and I thought, well, what the heck? Let's put them together and see if it works. And now we have this album.
Yeah. So you hand chose each of the pieces that you wanted to
do. I did. It took me about a year and I went through all of Glass's vocal work and all of the stuff I've sung of Handel. And I wanted things which really connected to me personally and that I thought were not all obvious choices. Some of the Handel rep is quite obscure, and some of the Glass rep was written for, you know, one piece was written for Linda Ronstadt to premiere at the Vienna airport in an airplane hangar with synthesizers. And we ask Glass if we could arrange that for Les Violons du Roi, this incredible orchestra, and he said absolutely. And so we've transformed it into it's still the same piece, but it's a classical vocal piece. So we really took some risks in not just choosing the most classical Glass vocal repertoire, but rather I wanted to venture outside and pull in pieces that were different and strange and that could give a new perspective.
Now, you were talking about the first track, right, from 1,000 Airplanes on the Roof?
Exactly.
Yeah, which I think is a great example of something that I hear quite often in your voice and when you sing and perform. Your voice tends to mold itself to some of the instruments that are playing with you. There are moments in that vocalese where I thought it was you, but it was actually an instrument in the orchestra.
Oh, thank you. That is so great. That is exactly what I want. And especially with an orchestra like Les Violons, I think that in a piece like that, that is vocalese especially, for the colors of your voice to all of a sudden blend with whether it's the oboe or the trumpet, that you find a way to become a part of the orchestra and then emerge from it, I think it's very exciting. And I think that, you know, even with Handel, there are moments when I want to match that tone that a certain instrument gives, and they match me. And of course, violins are always trying to sing, but sometimes I want to sing like a violin. And I think it creates a unity in terms of the approach and the music making, which has an impact, which I like.
Now, you started performing when you were 11 years old, right? Did I get that correct?
Yeah, well, yeah. Professionally. Before that, I was doing community theater and all kinds of stuff, but that was my first professional gig when I was 11, yeah.
So when did you discover the countertenor voice, or did it just sort of continue from childhood?
Well, I was singing as a boy soprano and having a great time doing it on Broadway. And then when I was 13, someone said, hey, would you do an opera, The Turn of the Screw by Benjamin Britten? And I was so taken by the psychological complexity and the depth of expression in that opera that I was kind of hooked right away. And I was with these opera singers and they said, hey, you know, you got hair on your arm. I think maybe you've gone through puberty. And I said, really? Well, I'm still singing high. And they said, yeah, maybe you're a countertenor. And I had no idea what that was. But I began to work with opera singers and people who would help me out. And I just kept singing high and we kept working on that high register. And I never thought twice about it. You know, I had two parents who were psychologists, both of them, and they never said, oh, you should be singing like a man, not like a girl. So I never thought about it. I just kept singing high and I wanted to keep singing high. And lo and behold, I became a countertenor.
Yeah. So it's great that you had familial support, shall we say.
Absolutely. And I sometimes posit that, you know, every man has the ability to sing in their falsetto. Now, not every man has a nice falsetto, but it's all there. People speak in their head voice when men laugh or when they imitate someone, they have that falsetto. And I wonder if we had different, you know, ideas in society about what masculinity was, whether we'd have more countertenors, who knows?
This reminds me of that video. I saw a video of you talking to sixth graders in the Bronx. And you sang for them. And their reaction at first being, you know, they were quite surprised. Some kids were laughing a little bit. But as you continued singing that beautiful Handel aria, you saw them really get wrapped up in the sound and the music. And it was transformative.
Absolutely. I think what's so great about being a countertenor, and some countertenors inevitably hate it, but I love it, is that there's a novelty factor and there's a shock that you open your mouth, and even if I'm at the most sophisticated opera house, there are so many people who've never heard a countertenor, and they come up and say, you were the first time, and when you opened your mouth, I couldn't believe it. And I think in those 30 seconds or that minute when sixth graders or new audiences are looking at a male body and hearing a female voice, they are so rapt in their attention. They're so shocked that you have a second for the beauty of the music to enter them with an intensity that it might not with another voice type. And so that's a hook that I love to use to get people engaged. And when I open my mouth in front of those sixth graders and they laugh, I welcome that because I want them to go, wait, what is happening? And they perk up in their chairs and all of a sudden they're not being forced to listen to the opera singer who's visiting. They're actually engaged with the music.
Yeah, that's great. Now, my eye is drawn to this cover photo on your album by George Kondo, and I know that this recording goes beyond just the music that's on the disc. You're doing an entire art installation project that is going to New York next month.
That's right. Well, I really feel like the future of classical music is in collaboration. And when we talk about how do we find new audiences, they're there, in my opinion, but they go to fashion shows, they go to art shows, they go to dance shows, they go to films, and they just don't have a point of access to this music that they would, I think, love. So I collaborated with some of the greatest artists, George Kondo, who did the covers, an incredible American painter, and I couldn't believe he agreed to do this. The only album cover he's ever agreed to do was for Kanye West. So I asked him, but he loves classical music and he wanted to bring his audience to this music. And similarly, this show, I work with Raf Simons, the fashion designer, who's the head of Calvin Klein now. And I work with the choreographer, Justin Peck, who just won a Tony for West Side Story and for Carousel, but who's doing the film of West Side Story with Steven Spielberg right now. And I work with these incredible filmmakers from Tilda Swinton to James Ivory to all different people who've made 9 music videos, which are projected during the installation and which you can find online. That illuminate these tracks from the CD in ways that you could never imagine. When I say music video, don't think of me standing in a docile, beautiful red curtain room with a lip syncing to something. You know, imagine crazy, there are tanks and dogs and there's a young girl boxing, and there are all kinds of wild things that are artistic and that allow you to imagine this music in ways that you never would on your own. So I think that's how we can start to expand the audience and expand the breadth of the sound.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I mean, bringing in all of these multimedia concepts into the world of opera. Is that what you see as the future, really how to connect with people down the road?
I think it's really one road to the future, and that what we have to do is not change the music itself. I think when we try and make the music into something popular and that style of pop music, but just sing it with an operatic voice, we lose something. But what's great about this way of approaching things is that we keep the handle intact as handle, but what we make crazy and wild and pop is the visual. So people are coming to a video because they want to see this famous filmmaker and what video they're making, and then they listen to the music and they wind up loving it, and what they're loving is traditional classical music.
Yeah. So what would you say to somebody who's never been to an opera before?
I would say, don't worry about the language. I know you think you're not going to understand anything and that you're going to have to read all these super titles, but you don't, because the action all takes place on stage. If you read the synopsis, which will take you about 90 seconds in the program before it starts, you will see everything happen. And it's almost like going to a sports game. This is also what I tell people. The soprano walks on stage and she's got a batting average. She may or may not hit that high C, but there's a chance. And so to watch these Olympians of the voice, singing opera is the Olympic version of singing. It is the most extreme thing. There are no microphones. You're projecting to thousands and thousands of seats with just your human body. And so there is an athletic aspect of that. And then on top of it, there's a great beauty, which gives us insight into these incredibly emotional moments in our lives that we only experience a handful of times, whether it's a great love or a death. Opera gives us a lens and a perspective with which to approach those moments without them being our own. And I think that is ultimately, not to sound too grandiose, the meaning of life and what life is about. And so you have all of these different things to think about and look at the opera, and you shouldn't be intimidated. You may not understand every bit of the history or the language, but I think people think that's going to matter, and it doesn't. It can really take you away and sweep you into a different world.
Well, I would urge anybody going into this recording to read your program notes because, number one, they're highly entertaining.
Oh, thanks.
And number two, it's really an exercise in what I've heard in our conversation that there are just no walls between you and the audience, and I think that's wonderful.
Absolutely, and that's how I can create things, is to be connected to people. I think that relationships, whether they're in the rehearsal room or in the bedroom, determine the art that we make. And so I'm always trying to connect to everyone, all different kinds of people, and let that inform the art that I do.
The album is called ARC. It is music of Philip Glass and George Frederick Handel from countertenor Anthony Roth Costanzo, Le Violon du Roi, directed by Jonathan Cohen. And Anthony, thanks so much for joining us here on FM 91.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me.